Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
And Brad.
Oh my God, we are back in the studio. Welcome to the first post-tour Pottercast.
Yay!
I'm on the internet again. It's weird. I don't like it. It's not natural.
I missed you guys, though. I'm excited.
Yay. Yay. All right. Well, as always, here on Pottercast, when we're not on tour, what we do is we have our little news, and then we go and do a watch on.
Oh, gosh. Today, we are going to give you a little bit more of the voicemails, your reactions to Half-Blood Prince, that movie who left us a lot of voicemails. We're going to play them, and then we're going to weigh in on that, including Sue's first ever Pottercast review of Half-Blood Prince, because you missed that from the last time we did it.
And then?
And then, you've long been waiting the next episode in Pottercast's own acting troupe. Oh, shoot.
Oh, snap.
It is such a big one that we're going to give you the first piece of it this week and then the second piece of it next week for episode 5, big episode 5. And then we're going to come back and wrap it all up together with the four of us being funny and witty and twitty and all those things.
Well, then let's talk about the news because we got lots to catch up on.
Oh, yes. Molly.
There was a lot of news, and I know that you guys probably talked about some of it while they were out on tour. They had a marvelous tour, and, you know, I'd like to say congratulations to you because I've heard nothing but just wonderful feedback. But there was a lot of news, and I've just been dying to get your input on some of the things that happened, especially our first thing. It's kind of like the Great Yeti sighting. It's kind of like a rare interview with Steve Kloves, and every time he talks.
Oh, yes. And a million nerd fighters just scream. Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, sorry.
He gave an interview to the LA Times, which did a remarkable series of interviews every day for 30 days before the countdown, before the release of Half-Blood Prince. But what they had this interview with Steve Kloves, and he actually said a few things of interest. One was that, I'll be the good. First thing he said that, and it was kind of a cool tidbit for us, canon fans, is that he learned from Joe that one of the 12 uses of dragon blood is not only, oven cleaner, but is also spot remover.
That makes sense. That's
yeah,
in line
spot
with
remover, that it covers it with a nice red hue. Yeah, that's true. It does.
Can you, like, trip out, like, vampire blood if you drink dragon's blood? Like on True Blood?
No.
Can it heal you?
Maybe that's one of the uses. I can't wait for the Scottish book for her to list those uses. And if she doesn't, we'll give her what for.
I think so.
Of course we're going to. That's going to be Frankie's project. She'll hire him to illustrate all 12 usages.
That would be so cool.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would do it, Joe, if you're listening.
You
so don't
do
worry.
Do it, Frankie. I'll tell you what all 12 uses are if you give me like a minute to think about it.
You know, Frank, I think she was really worried that you wouldn't do it if she asked. So it's a good thing that you said that.
Yeah. It's good I clarified that.
Just letting her know.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now she can sleep at night.
Totally.
I don't have time. I have to catch up with my correspondence.
This is why we never get through bit by bit. We're still on line one of item
all
one.
Right. Good. Second news.
Okay, there's so much with this interview. I really urge it, and we'll put it in the show notes for this, because I just think if you missed this when it came out, because we had so much news in the last 2 months. But this interview is well worth reading, and he spoke about why, Steve Kloves spoke about why he was thinking of leaving the series, because at the time, Emma Watson, before Order of the Phoenix, was thinking of not coming back. And so he said, I always said, too, that if the kids left, I would leave, too. There was some talk about Emma Watson, who plays Hermione, leaving, and that would have been hard for me if Emma had left, because I love writing for the three kids.
No, I just, like, I'm trying to find it in me to see where he's coming from.
Would he have been as bothered if Rupert was going to leave?
That's what I'm saying. There was talk at every point about people leaving.
Every point.
Why? Why if the kids left, does it ruin it for the scriptwriter?
Exactly. It's a character, right?
I hate when we get too heavy on Stephen Colbert. Like, he does a great job. He really, I think, did a great job with Six. The Hermione thing just kind of pushes the button.
It's funny.
Obama was everywhere.
He is being.
I agree for the most part. I mean, Six was such a better effort, but like, we did get recently a copy of the script for the scene at the end when they're all on the tower and Hermione is talking to Harry, and it has directions for note. It says, Ron scratches feet. Ron looks at Harry and Hermione. Ron scratches head. Meanwhile, Hermione has all these lines.
Literally? You're not being John right now?
No, literally. It says, Ron shuffles feet. Ron looks around confused.
Don't tell me these things, John.
Because in the book, Ron says, yes, we're with you. Like, that's, it's key that the three of them show that they are with him. Why?
No, it was like Hermione has a line like, you know, we're coming with you, Harry. And then it's like Ron picks nose, Ron scratches head.
Well, now you're being John.
Well, right there. But you know what? That goes to another, because he goes on in the same sentences, I feel very much in charge of protecting the characters. And the thing that upsets me most is when I feel the characters are being violated. So let's talk about the violation of Ron Weasley, which you've done.
Yeah.
There's a hell of a lot of fanfic about that, so.
Okay.
Oh, Ron. John, see, Ron. I don't want to be, like, mad at him or whatever. He's for a mammoth job, for the most part, he's done.
He's doing great. He protected the characters. Every other last 99% of them, other than Ron.
Except for Ron. Why? Why is Ron never protected?
I think Rupert's just kind of a jerk to him on set. Like, he constantly makes faces at him. So, there's probably just a rivalry there.
He's intimidated by Ron because he wants to really be with Hermione.
Oh, that's what it was.
He's making Ron unworthy.
Oh, he's like Victor Krum.
Victor Krum.
We love you, Victor Krum. Okay, but Sue, what was the next question?
This is a really good thing because this goes to our documentary or our DVD commentaries, John, and hopefully Frankie will get to do this too. But I know that we've all discussed this as the four of us. He talks about the cheese ball ending to Chamber of Secrets, and that's my cheese ball is my phrase. But he talks about the moment.
I love the Hagrid bit.
Oh, come on, and he actually speaks to it, and he said it was a violation of the character that the students would not applaud when Hagrid comes in. And that was odd because, he blames Chris Columbus for that moment. He actually does. That hokey ending.
Well, I don't know what their relationship was, but he's probably not lying. It probably was Chris Columbus who insisted on it. It seems a particular Chris Columbus thing to do. But it's very nice to see somebody from the film stand up and say, you know what? That was cheesy, and it wouldn't have happened, you know?
Like, well, who was the J.A. that decided to end Azkaban on a freeze frame?
Don't even get me started on that. That's my most...
I don't understand.
I'll take a Hagrid clap.
And they blurred his face. Like, that was so intentional, with this awkward, like, blur on his face.
But who cares?
I care.
I just think it's funny for him to, you know... be upset about Chamber of Secrets end, and then, you know, that's certainly not as good as Azkaban end, but whatever, I don't know. Every movie should end with a slow pan out from the train.
The Azkaban ending, probably that wasn't him. Like, probably it's Harry flies off on his wand, but, on his wand, on his broom, but
probably
that's a directorial decision to stop it there.
Freeze frame.
Yeah, I mean, is that the directors on everyone? Because is my recollection, he has worked on 5 out of the 6 movies, and they've all ended with these hokey, freezing kind of like flying off to the end kind of things. And so it's not his decision on how the movie ends, the screenwriter? I don't know. I have
no
time with that.
I mean, I believe he writes it, but I don't think, maybe somebody can prove me wrong, but I don't think it's in the script direction and on freeze frame of Harry's face, you know?
Yeah.
You're probably right. We'll go ahead and blame Alfonso for that one.
Well, but also, I mean, like, I don't think 6 was as hokey. It certainly wasn't unhokey, but it was...
It was
fine. I thought it was great.
Just end again?
Hmm? With Fox.
Hermione and Ron looking out into the sun, and...
Fox flying away.
Ron picking a wedgie or something. Something along that importance.
Ron scratching his head, shuffling feet, while Hermione spews wisdom and confidence and assures Harry that everything will be fine.
Pretty much. Oh, well.
Oh. I don't want to be like this because somebody wrote us, it's really funny, somebody made this comment on when we talked about the movie and how much we loved it. They're like, you do this every time. You see the movie, you freak out, you love it, and then 3 weeks later you guys are picking on it. But we pick out of love. Like, I have the same feeling for Six that I had when I first saw it, but there are always going to be these things that we can pick on. And
yeah, I just don't think we make enough effort.
I think it's a lot of it because we each have the things we were disappointed in, and then it just takes time for us to, like, actually hear what people are saying. Yeah. Like, with the whole Ginny thing, at first I was like, she was fine. And then eventually it was like, yeah, she was kind of weird. Because John was all like, I hate her. And I'm like, well. And I was like, well, it's
not true. I just wanted to clarify that it's not me razzing on her as a person or even, you know, saying she's a terrible actress, any of those things. It's just that she's not as practiced as the rest of the three of them. And it was evident in this movie. But, you know, excellent that she had some lines, but. Just would have been nice if she had as many movies to practice giving lines as the rest of them.
It did totally change the way Ginny interacts with Harry in the book for the movie. So in that, and that's like fundamental to her character. Ginny comes on to him quite a lot in the book, in the movie, not in the book. Like Harry just starts noticing her in the book and then grabs her and kisses her, and that's a Ron Lavender moment now, you know.
Where were we? Oh, okay, we have much more news. This is a fun thing, John. You will love this part. Okay, this next news, as we know, there is a theme park being built in Orlando, Florida.
Really?
Yes, really. I know. Stop talking about Harry Potter. And one of the cool things that we've learned is these are from fan sites that are, you know, theme park fan sites, but the one is really fairly credible source about the ride that is going through the Hogwarts Castle, and that's just been confirmed by David Heyman, who said there are going to be three rides. David Heyman is the producer of the film, so there are going to be three rides. And one of the things we learned is that you're going to go through the castle on like these kind of like robotic arms. It's kind of like a free flowing kind of thing, and I let John describe this more because I can't speak it. But it's also going to have the Magic Quest system throughout the whole park. Excited.
But not just the park, the other Islands of Adventure areas as well, not just the Hogwarts. Right?
With a wand?
Yeah.
There's little, explain Magic Quest, somebody.
Okay, well, you know, think laser tag, but with a wand, and instead of shooting it at each other, which would be hysterical if you could buy, like, vests or something to wear.
That'd be awesome.
But you fire your wands at things in the park. And my big question is, can you fire it while you're on this crazy Hogwarts ride and interact with the ride? That's the gossip now, is that you have lands like, you know, the one with all the Marvel comic book heroes, and then the old Rocky and Bullwinkle and all those guys area, and the Dr. Seuss area, and the Jurassic Park area, and the Lost Continent, and all that stuff. You're going to have things you could potentially interact with, which... You know, if anyone's ever, with your wand, which a wand that apparently you buy at the park, presumably you can bring your own wand back.
So it's not going to be a wand then.
What's
that?
No, it's going to look like a wand.
It's going to be a device.
Yeah.
It's going to be a device.
Well, it's a wand-shaped device. It's not like a gun. It's going to look like a wand.
But how's a wand going to work with, like, superheroes?
There'll be little symbols.
Yeah. How it works is that there's going to be...
I mean, like... The things that you happen in the other in the themed areas are going to be themed to that area, right?
Lightning
bolt
symbol.
So are they going to? Oh, they're not going to. It's not going to be like in like I don't know, like the superhero land. You're not going to get like a little Thor hammer.
No. Understand that you. This isn't something that you're renting at the park. You buy a wand if you want to interact with the park, and you bring your own wand back.
Yes.
So everything is going to rely on your wand. You're not like. Like a superhero guy in superhero land, you're still a wizard in superhero land.
That's so weird that they're doing that throughout the park. That's
cool, awesome.
Though.
Might as well take advantage of their space and the system.
I didn't think they would do that.
No. Well, we're all very interested to see how that's going to turn out, and I'm sure once it is up, you know, you can rely on Leaky for your definitive guide to the magical locations of the wizarding world.
Very cool. So it's really coming along. And Melissa, you'll get a chuckle out of this. If longtime readers of Leaky will remember how when we were waiting for the books to come out that Warner Brothers registered names.
It was like the big game throughout 10 years of waiting for the books to come out was check those trademark sites because these names pop up and they ended up being all of them registered by Warner Brothers, you know, and some buried in there somewhere was always an accurate title for a book or something, you know.
Well,
because they're protecting the names before they actually start using them, so they would register a lot of fakes as well.
Right. And ooh, some crafty member remembered that probably and did the same thing for the theme park. And it's just, so they came up with the one name. It's called Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, which is just.
What?
What?
Okay. I hope it does not take place in Hagrid's hut.
Done.
Oh, John, I've missed
you
so much.
Talk about your forbidden adventures.
Okay. So a lot of them are just, you know, traditional names that we've heard before. On the polls, if you go to the Universal Orlando thing, we've done polls about the three broomsticks. Where would you like to have a butterbeer? There's Ollivanders and Honeydukes and Zonkos, all that. But the one name is funny, that the Forbidden Journey. So I knew Melissa would get a crack up on that.
It's so funny. It's like, here we are again, looking up trademark names.
Come back to haunt us.
Ghosts of Leaky Past.
Okay, well, not speaking of ghosts, but this is kind of the future, what's coming up, which is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. We heard so much of this news during the release of Haplet Prince, and I know this sounds crazy to kind of switch gears like this, but we heard so much, especially from David. And I was really surprised at how forthcoming, in particular, David Heyman and David Yates were.
I gotta tell you, David Heyman, sometimes I wonder if people from Warner Brothers, like, just know that there's nothing they can do. He's just gonna spill something every time he does an interview. Because literally, there's not a question that man won't answer.
Yeah, you're right. Well,
it's great.
Look how forthcoming he was with you. I mean, on your interviews, were great with him. Amazing.
He is very candid, and it's such a relief. I think I speak for anybody who's ever interviewed a lot of people from a film studio before. It's so... God, it's great. I love
reading
interviews.
He's probably the one that's, like, in charge of deciding what comes out when. So
well,
he can say whatever he wants.
And then there's Heyday Films, and it's
right.
they're
I'm sure Warner Brothers.
And there's a lot of crossover. I don't know exactly how it all works. So, right, they cannot send him to interview school like that. He's David Heyman, you know? But it's just really funny that he's just this very straightforward guy. And it's great. It makes him a joy to interview. It makes his interviews a joy to read. And it makes you trust him, you know?
Yeah.
It totally does, because I remember when he was talking about the finding, you know, the decision to delay it. I mean, he just point blank said, yeah, it was a financial decision.
Yeah. Like, thank you. This is what we've been waiting for somebody to say, you know? Like, we all knew it. We all knew it. Treat us like the adults and the film fans and the intelligent people we are. Just say it. We'll forgive you, you know?
He said some really great things. This is really great news. He confirmed that John Williams is in talk there and in talks with him to come back and score Deathly Hallows, which is...
He sure as hell better.
I think that's fabulous.
Come back and finish what you started.
I'm sorry, but there's no bigger movie happening within 2 years of this movie, so there's
so
no
enormous.
Excuse.
They better not move it. They better not move it.
Oh, I hope not. I mean, I know that they're doing there's a lot of big movies coming out, but I just don't, I don't think that they will, Millie. I think that they've got that locked because everybody's like positioning around
them. Doing it.
Everybody's positioning around it.
I can see them moving it from the year apart.
No, Frack. No.
I can see that happening.
No.
Doing what?
Moving it back another
year. Instead of being 6 months apart, they're a year apart.
Oh.
We get the first one scheduled
be a year apart.
Oh.
They're 6 months apart, John.
No, it's six.
But no, they're going to change that.
No,
they're not.
Why?
Because they don't need two huge movies happening like that all at once.
They're not the same year.
Well, it'll be.
They're part of their one. They're two
year.
Parts of one movie, one story.
Oh, that's freaking finance trickery.
For them, right? For them, the year matters. The year it came out.
So some of the really cool things, I don't want to talk too many spoilers because some people are avoiding it, but I will say this, that Mr. Heyman has said that the Battle of Hogwarts is going to be 30 minutes alone.
Yeah, I remember the day we found
out. Consecutively, though, it's just total.
No, just that battle part. He said there's the first part of the battle,
total.
And then the post
well,
part of
they get to Hogwarts relatively quickly, and they have a little bit of build-up at Hogwarts and all those scenes
the
getting into
happened.
The...
And there are two parts. So which one? I think he means the beginning is the first. Because the rest of it isn't so much a battle as the decade is being blown back, and then the big showdown.
Yeah. Big showdown. Oh, gosh.
I mean, that part, I think that they'll allow a lot of time because that's so emotional and that's such the crux of it all.
But the first part's a big battle, isn't it?
Huge battle.
Yeah,
huge.
Very violent.
Yeah, the first part. Yeah, okay. Well, I thought you just said
if
it
they
wasn't.
Guys, if they get to Hogwarts fairly early on, how are they going to do Gringotts?
Yes.
In number two.
They're doing Gringotts.
They are in number two, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know.
Gringotts is
a
half hour.
You know what's interesting to me, though, how I love how David Yates is phrasing this, too. He's very eloquent in his things. And he said the first movie, part one, is like a road movie. And the second part is very operatic and very just, you know, sweeping. So I don't know, Melly. That's a good question, how they will get that.
Maybe it starts on Gringotts. Maybe it's
I don't know.
It's Malfoy Manor, Gringotts, boom, Hogwarts. But that, even then, how do they get to... Okay. If there's 30 minutes for the first part of the battle, then Harry's death part's got to be at least 15 minutes, and then the end is like another half hour before you get to the end and you have the epilogue and whatever. That's already 75 minutes. But there's still plenty of movie left. Like an hour of movie left.
You know who's coming back, though, for Deathly Hallows? Is Michael Gambon. He's going to be a ghost, he says.
A ghost. That's no good.
Look at the London premiere, and he's like... they're ghosts. You can't kill a wizard. I'm back in seven as a ghost. Like, no, you nitwit. Read the freaking book. And you almost want to forgive him because he's so funny.
He doesn't says you don't need to read the books. That's our next news story.
There's no point in reading the books, says Michael Gambon.
Through like a knife through my heart.
You know what?
Well, that's why it's like, you know, if someone casts you to be like a general... in, like, the Civil War or whatever, surely you can learn enough about what it means to be a general in the Civil War just by reading the script of your movie. I mean, surely you wouldn't research the part in any other way.
Exactly.
Good Lord. I'm sorry that it's not as important as what a wizard's going to act like than any other part you'd research, but...
But he's funny about it. Like, you almost want to forgive him because he's just a funny, crotchety old man.
Yeah, he's a crotchety old man. That'd be like telling my grandpa he had to read the whole book before he played Dumbledore. I think I would probably just be happy he was playing Dumbledore. Actually, I probably wouldn't bother him.
He would have been a good Dumbledore.
Well, you know, he has a point when he's saying you're playing with Steve Clovis's words, which is true as an actor. That's fine. But there are things called nuance and subtlety, and he says that he brings his own self as an actor into the part. Like, he was going on to describe how the fans got upset about, you know, during Goblet of Fire when he, you know, shakes Harry and all that. And he says, and Dumbledore, or Michael Gambon says of Dumbledore, he's got to be scary, you know, and he's essentially playing himself. So, I think that was a joke.
I think he said, I play myself a little Irish, a little scary. That's what I'm like in real life. I think that's Gambon's classic dry wit, you know? I don't think he really means that.
I hope not, but I don't know. It disappointed me because I've seen him do such extraordinary other performances, and you just know he understands nuance. He can get subtlety. He can do these really wonderful things, and I just think he could have gotten that more if he had taken the time to read Joe's books, and
I still think that before Ian McKellen was cast as Gandalf, they should have snatched him up for Harry Potter. That's my dream.
Oh, my God.
My dream scenario, if we were to go back
to
the
beginning.
That.
You're killing
me. Nice little old man, nice little kind face to the hobbits, and a little smile, like, oh, I understand.
He was perfect.
I'll go through these last things really quickly because I know this is taking forever. The filming is ongoing with Deathly Hallows. In fact, this week the wedding scene is being done to great hurrah. Crumb is back.
So it is Bill and Fleur. They're not going to pull a fast one and do Remus and Tonks.
No, it totally is Bill and Fleur for 100% for sure. Tonks is going to be there. And what's that?
I would not have been happy if they switched that. I don't know why.
I know.
That would have been really upsetting. I mean, like, I don't know why it gets such attachment, but I'm like, no. It can't be that. Maybe because it's a Weasley getting married. I think that's what it is. I want a Weasley.
We
a Weasley wedding.
Just completely would have changed Remus's character. And all of Remus's, you know, his, oh, I'm so emo because no one approves of this relationship and my family.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You have a whole people coming together for your wedding. You know, that would completely be all against that.
I think that's going to be a shorthanded storyline anyway.
Oh, sure. I won't even barely be in there, but.
Well,
I'd rather them omit something than
weird, though,
completely
to have this whole wedding
something.
For a character we've never met.
Yeah,
never
exactly.
seen Bill. He's not in any of the films. It's just kind of strange.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Once you give him red hair, it'll be pretty obvious that he's
yeah,
a relation.
Yeah, all red-haired people are Weasleys. I forgot.
Yeah, that's the rule.
Well, this yeah. movie anyway. According to Malfoy, all redheads are Weasleys, so who cares?
Redhead.
I knew you were going to do that.
Down road and a stupid clothes. Complexion.
Speaking of Malfoys, who did very well in Half-Blood Prince, which is doing amazingly well at the box office, $816 million.
Unreal.
In a
month.
That's crazy.
In less than a month.
50 of that's mine.
What?
I've seen it like 4 times or something.
Oh, $50. That's what you were saying. Yeah. 50 million of it is yours.
Oh, yeah. For all my contributions.
I just, you know, I don't even get those kind of numbers. They're just, you know, I mean, like the opening, the midnight releases, you know, it even beat Dark Knight, which I would thought was fairly.
What was the budget for Apple Prince?
$250 million.
50? Nice.
Yeah.
250,
John.
$250 million.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, I thought
said.
You said 50.
Oh,
really?
50
with
that.
Any film of you.
Yeah.
Did you
good
think you saw?
Lordy.
So, and the final thing, we can look forward to the DVD coming out in December, the first week in December, December 7th.
Cool.
And this is
fast.
The cool. It is. But they turn it around so much. I mean, we had stories about the piracy just like, you know,
wait,
several days
when?
After.
September?
December.
Oh, holiday, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fast, but makes sense.
So fast.
Just coming out. But hopefully the big rumor is that we're going to get that first look at Deathly Hallows like we got for Half-Blood Prince with the DVD. So keep your fingers crossed. It has a lot of potential. That's all I got.
I'm not buying. I think I've bought one DVD, Harry Potter DVD. I'm waiting. I am patiently waiting.
Didn't they announce some kind of, like, Ultimate Edition
Ultimate,
or something?
David Heyman said it at the press junket for Half-Blood Prince. He said he sort of looked out. He was mentioning DVDs, and he sort of guessed that the question that was springing to everybody's mind, and he just went, yes, there will be an Ultimate Edition collector set. Worry not. You know,
well,
like,
yeah, I'm sure
like,
it'll probably
really,
be like...
You think we're not gonna put out a very expensive Ultimate Edition 7 movie set, really? You know?
It'll be like in a trunk, like it did for the books, like in a cute little Harry's trunk.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for...
I want, obviously, Blu-ray, ABC Family Edition, extended scene.
There had
better be
some commentaries.
Well, that's what they did with Lord of the Rings. They put out the 3 movie set originally, and then they waited like 6 months, and they put out another 3 movie set with like extended, so it was like a third of the film longer.
I want commentary with Stuart Craig.
Oh, that sounds boring.
Yeah, sounds
boring.
Really boring.
How about I want commentary with Stuart Craig?
Okay, that sounds boring.
Actually, I would like that too with Stuart Craig. I think that would be neat. I think it would be really fun.
With both.
Because he created the world. I mean, it's his, you know, his props and things.
Really, when we look back on who made all of it go, it's got to be Stuart Craig who designed. I mean, they designed this stuff in ways that nobody's ever going to see, and they're going to start packing stuff away soon. Like,
I want a piece of Hogwarts. I don't know if they're going to take it down, but I want to own it.
There's no outside. This is a nice piece of trivia. At least as far as I know, there is no built outside of Hogwarts.
No.
I want the floor or a piece of the table, Great Hall, the table or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I would like that.
Oh, that'd be so cool to see that stuff. There'll be multiple museums traveling.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot. I think we're in for a lot of showing of the things that were used to...
Well, you know what I'm curious about is that, you know how Universal is big on doing this for their rides, the queue, the line and everything?
Oh, yes.
They have stuff all over the walls, like original props and original costumes and everything from the movie that they're taking you on a ride about.
Uh-huh.
And this is really big in Universal Studios, more than Islands of Adventure, but I could totally see them filling the queue for the Hogwarts ride with stuff, props from the movies and everything.
Well, that, you know, John, that was one of the things that came out, and just there was so much news, and I just, but one of the rumors was is that when you're standing, the queue is going to get into the ride through the castle, it's going to be a very, like, sensory kind of, like, it will snow at one part of you when you're going through the line and that kind of thing, and, like, you'll have the feeling of the candles over you over the Great Hall and stuff, so that would be really cool if they could put some of those props in there.
Well, we've got, what do we have coming up here on the show? We have, as mentioned, the acting troupe.
Yay!
The new edition. You've been waiting all summer for it. We have more of your comments and voicemails that you've been leaving us about the film.
Mm-hmm.
And when are we going to talk to Sue about what she thought of the film?
Gonna do that right after these messages.
Okay.
Cool. We'll be right back.
Okay, this is my Half-Blood Prince react, so I'm just gonna get right to it. First of all, I thought that they could have done without the little, like, 10-second shots of Draco in the Room of Requirement just pulling the sheet off of the Vanishing Cabinet, because they could have used that time to bring in stuff from the book that wasn't in the book. So, thanks for listening.
I thought the movie was fantastic. The only things that bothered me were Ron's helmet, and sometimes the portraits didn't move. Also, how when Dumbledore was falling off the tower, it just looked more funny than it was serious to me. And also how every time Draco had a scene, all he did was just take the blanket off the cabinet really dramatically.
Hey, this is Aki Austin, and I thought this movie was awesome. The look was amazing. I love the details, especially Toy Umbridge and Fred and George's shop. The acting was great. Rupert and Dan really stepped it up with the comedy, and Tom Felton did an excellent job with Draco's internal conflict. My complaints are, Snape's line, "Don't call me coward," was removed. We didn't get to see him lose control at all. Could have given us a glimpse of Snape without his usual calm, collected, and control facade. One more thing I would enjoy was a funeral. Could have added more depth and sadness to Dumbledore's quick death.
I thought the movie was really flat and boring. I should have been heart-wrenched in the cave scene, and I wasn't. There were some really good scenes, but not enough to carry the whole movie, and the pacing was much too slow. When you're looking for a Bezoar to save Ron's life, it shouldn't seem as though you're searching for a pencil.
There's this part in Half-Blood Prince when Harry's trying to get the memory from Slughorn, and he says, "This is the most important thing that I can tell you, and only people have guessed at it," and my friend leans over and says, "I have no lenses in my glasses." And it was the funniest thing, and we just laughed for 5 minutes, and that was my highlight from the movie.
Hey, Pottercast, I just want to share the story, because we were waiting for Half a Prince to start in the theater, and I stood up and asked everybody in the theater if anyone had seen a Harry Potter musical, and everyone was, like, looking at me like I was crazy, and it was really embarrassing. But at least I tried.
Hey, Pottercast. I thought Half-Blood Prince is okay. The plotline seemed to be caught between Half-Blood Prince and a romantic comedy, and there seemed to be a really mixed focus because of all their choppy scene editing. They never explained things to their non-readers, and you were always waiting for them to tell you what was actually going on with their actions, but nothing ever came. The romance was really fun to watch, but Hermione was a little too obvious, and Lavender was a little too over the top. It all seemed to be filler when they could have been doing great backstory for Deathly Hallows. Thanks, Kevin.
Hi, Pottercast, I'm Brock. I thought the new Half-Blood Prince movie was incredible. Not all the book can be in the movie, which I made my mindset seeing it for a second time. I was really hoping for a bigger battle at the end, though. They cut out Dumbledore's funeral, which you guys talked about, and I can totally live with, but I thought there should have been a more decent fight scene at the end of the movie.
Thank you, all of you, for all of your voicemails. We've got, they keep coming in, actually, a few more since this has aired. Have came in, no doubt, I'm sure. That's just futures talk, of course, because this isn't a live show. But anyway, Sue, we didn't get to hear all of your reviews, because last time you interviewed us about what we thought. So Here we are. It's been a couple of weeks. What did you think of Half-Blood Prince?
Okay, first of all, I want to say I love each of you very much, and I hope that you will still want to be friends with me after this.
Let's hear it.
I called this Harry Potter and the Almost Good Movie. I was very disappointed in it, to be actually honest. I thought parts of it were, and that's not an accurate reflection, because there are parts of it I thought were superbly done and were in fact some of the best moments I've seen them commit for a Harry Potter film. There were scenes that were just superb. I thought Jim Broadbent gave a superb, melancholy, sad, wistful, heartbreaking performance, and I thought he was just the best part of the movie. And next up was followed by Tom Felton and Alan Rickman were just wonderful, and I was really enthused with that. But these positive things do not make up for things that just broke my heart, and I just had a really hard time with a lot of the things that I had saw, is what I saw in the movie. And I thought it was very choppy. I didn't think it flowed. You know, David Yates is a very gifted director, and I thought that he wasted too much time trying to pay homage to certain old-style films and lost the overall arch of making a singular piece of film. And I know this is different than everybody else, and I know I'm going to get hate mail for this, and I'm sorry. I just felt it was like chop, chop. Here's a beautiful scene, stop, boom. Here's a beautiful scene, stop, boom. And I just felt like I was like on this like chum, chum, boom machine when I was watching it. And it just really, I was so disappointed. And maybe it's because I had been waiting for 2 years and I had expectations, but I was just like, was so disappointed in the fact that things that I had seen in the marketing were not, you know, Warner Brothers spent $125 million. They just advertised this film out the glue. And everywhere I saw, and I was looking forward to the scenes that I had saw advertised. Where was Harry? And maybe it was in it because I've only seen it once. Where was Harry when he said, I'm with Dumbledore, you know, and the scene in the courtyard. I did not see that. And I was so, it seems petty and insignificant in the whole, you know, scheme of things. But there were things that I was just very disappointed. Why they chose to discard the Dursleys, and why would they take away that continuity and show Harry flirting with a waitress? Like it was trying to set him up, like, okay, suddenly he's a teenage boy who's suddenly being aware of the opposite sex. That's fine. I get that. That's the premise behind, you know, a lot of what goes on in the book. But I was like, oh, my God, why not have the Dursleys in there if you want to have a continual thing? And it's not important. I know that the Dursleys do not affect the storyline or the plot. But for me as a fan, it's something, a familiarity I like to see within the things, kind of like part of the whole fabric of this. I was so just, John Hewitt spoke so great about how real it was, and I agree. I thought the film was wonderful and it looked accurate, but it was so real that it was like the magic was sucked out of Hogwarts. Every place else, the Burrow and Weasley's Emporium was much more magical than Hogwarts. I just felt like the magic wasn't there for me in this movie, and I know that makes me just a wretched person. And
how would you say that you're a wretched person?
I don't know. I just feel like I have to, but I was so like, okay, let's talk about that final scene with Dumbledore. The cave scene, which was so intense, and just those golem-like creatures were amazing, and Harry getting sucked down was amazing, and Dumbledore, Gambon nailed that scene. I thought it was wonderful. And then they cut it. They ended it with the Moses shot and him parting the waves, you know, the ring of fire to get out with that path. And I just, I just was like, it was so close to being so good, and then it was just like, oh, we were so close, and it just, oh. So, that's my opinion. I'm sorry. I was so close.
First of all, I've never, ever seen one piece of hate mail for us having an opinion.
I know.
Yeah. Passionate mail, yes, but we've never gotten somebody saying we hate you for this, you know. Don't think you're going to get hate mail. There's nothing, you know, it's your opinion.
I wanted to like it so much, Melly, you know? I did, and I wanted to just cherish this to my heart, because I, you know, as a news person, I've known things for a long time about this movie, and I thought, oh, this is just going to be kick-ass.
I think some of that ruined it for you, because honestly, some of our opinions are usually close, at least sometimes, most of the time, close to being in line, and we are way on opposite sides on a lot of the things that you said.
Well, let's see if we can, let's try and break this down in a way that's more, lends into easier conversation. Like, can you identify like a top or five of your things that bothered you, Sue?
Okay, the number one thing
we can talk about.
Sure. The number one thing that disappointed me, and I don't think it was a horrible movie. It just wasn't, it's not my favorite of the films. But the thing that disappointed me so much is I felt like the magic wasn't there. I just felt, I don't understand why Hogwarts was the least magical place in the whole film.
Okay. That's a good starting point. Is the magic go away, Hogwarts in particular?
I mean, I saw evidence. I saw a book floating behind a person walking through the library. I mean, that's fun.
I felt like I saw a few moments that were just kind of random. And what could be considered the magic is gone. Is maybe, like, in my opinion is more, is the magic is more subtle and more part of the environment.
Integrated
part
into
of
everyday
when I
life.
Say that, yeah, to say that, like, everything feels more real because, like, I put this in stark contrast to Chamber of Secrets when we had to walk into the room and we had to have a camera shot of every single magical thing happening.
Yeah.
And it was just shoved down our throats. And
wait,
here,
in which movie?
Things are just happening. In Chamber of Secrets, when they go to the burrow,
right.
And you see every little appliance and,
oh, and like
every
in,
little bit like that.
And in the Leaky Cauldron in The Third Man?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Chair floating upside down.
Prisoner of Azkaban, I think, was the first time I heard, I think it was Alfonso Cuarón say that we really wanted to try and have things happening in the background without drawing too much attention to them.
But they did.
And when he was referring to, like, going into Hagrid's hut and having this weird little creature in the background and not addressing what it is, at least, you know, they did cut to it a couple of times, but they didn't say, oh, and here's this Snuggleupagus guy, you know, in the corner. They didn't. They just have things happening without acknowledging them. And they got to the point in, I guess, 6 where, you know, there's random bits of magic happening, and was there, like, a couple different things happening in the...
Well, there were the birds. There were the birds, I saw that, and, you know, of course, yeah. Seamus had to blow up something else in one of the potion classes.
Yeah,
know?
I like that.
I do too!
I like that callback to the first film, to the first,
he always,
maybe even two.
Doesn't he always blow himself in every movie, or...?
He always, it's like Seamus the accidental pyromaniac.
Yeah.
I like that throwback.
I like that too, I do too.
And the look on his face was like, oh, I did it again. Like, it was just like,
oops.
Yeah.
I did it again.
I don't know.
I feel like maybe I can agree with your statement, but almost think that maybe this is intentional. Like, when Harry was younger, everything was magic and it was new and it was exciting, but, like, look at yourself maybe as an 18-year-old or maybe even as, like, Snape age, and you're walking through Hogwarts, you're not, like, mystified and awed by the magic. It's just part of your everyday life. And maybe by the time Harry's 16 or 17, that's more of his outlook on it all, too.
You know, and that's a valid point, and I do take that consideration. I see what you're saying there, and it is, because obviously he's not focused on that. He's focused on, you know, his burdening feelings for, blooming feelings for Ginny and, aware of the pressures, you know, plus he's just lost Sirius, and I understand that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just.
Well, no, you're talking about one of your other ones now.
Oh,
one
yeah.
The whole romance bit.
No.
Where's that on your top 5?
Because
that's actually on my list, too.
I just thought that was all. It was there was too much focus on that for me, but it wasn't too distracting for me, oddly enough.
Well, when you mentioned you didn't like the part how the movie started with Harry and
the waitress.
Station
and God.
Talking to some random waitress.
That just was... I get what he was trying... I totally, as a filmmaker, I understand from a story point of view what they wanted to do. You know, I understood what he was coming from. I understand why they added that in. I did. But for me, if I have to... if I have to weigh between putting the Dursleys in and putting that in... For me, as a fan, I wanted to see the continuity. I wanted to see that story, that part continued. I know that's it's very inconsequential in the overall scheme of it, but it just answer me this. This is my own internal debate. Is the Daily Prophet a magical item or not? Is it just
magic?
I mean, yes, but I think it can be seen by other people. I just think that.
I think the danger is breaking the secrets, the act is...
Harry's being an idiot.
Yeah, Harry's being stupid. And then they kind of address it, too, by saying, you've been reckless, Harry. And he's like, I like riding on trains. And so, like, I really... That concept... There's a few things that just side little comments or little, like, side stories that I really enjoyed about this film. Like, how he rides trains on his free time. That's really cool. And then the whole... Lily flower thing, I still stand by the fact I would have loved that if that was actually in the canon. I like that.
You know, the Dursleys, I was almost relieved that they, to be frank, throughout all the films, like the Dursleys, they've been fine, they've done their function, but I've never really found them to capture that Dursley-ness. You know, Vernon is he's a great actor, you know, what's his name's been great. It's been Petunia's wonderful, but they've never. I don't know. It's just never really gelled. I think it might be Uncle Vernon. He's always just a little odd to me in the role, and it always just seems like something they do kind of compulsorily, you know. And I was kind of relieved to see the yoke of we have to start with the Dursleys. Kind of gone.
I would have liked to seen the interaction though with Dumbledore with them. That would have been awesome.
Like, it's something that like I want to see in my fan wish of seeing things in a movie, and I don't particularly want it in the film. You know what I mean?
I see, and I understand why they do that, because the interaction, because I thought the interaction between Gambon and at Slughorn's house was beautifully done. I thought that was like a masterpiece. Out of these little clump things that I was talking about in the movie, that was a beautifully crafted scene. It was magical. It was funny, and it was. I was like, oh, okay. After I got past the overexcitement, and I was like, okay, we go to Dursley's, and yes, this is cool. This is, you know, the game. So I can understand why you would say that, Molly. I can't. I just.
It feels like a heavy, we must do this kind of feeling. Whereas in the books, to me, this is just opinion.
Yeah.
In the books, to me, it felt like a oh, we're back at the Dursleys, and
well, this
I get it. This is a convention of the book, but in a movie where I'm so worried about flow and how they're going to do this and how do we get from point A to point B and hit all the themes with a lot less room than you have in a book, I'm glad to see him go.
But see, that's my whole point then. So are we doing internal, like an individual film, or are we talking as part of a series? And for me, that was jarring. And to the people that I was with, that was jarring, who have seen it, just a lot of people I went with had just watched these films and they're used to that continuity. I know that sounds bizarre, but it's just like, okay, so he doesn't live with his family anymore, you know, just, and I like that kind of sense of familiarity. I don't know, maybe that's, I don't know, but that's just my opinion. Yeah. I thought Rupert Grint was so funny, but he was just,
I still think Dan was funnier than Rupert. The whole cast, every interview, everything is like the Ron scene with the chocolates is the funniest thing in the world. You will die, you will laugh, you will cry tears of joy. And it's funny. But the Felix Felices scene, man, I think is funnier.
I think
Ron was funniest during the Quidditch tryouts.
He was great.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing.
With that whole Cormac, it was
and
very well.
And then when
done.
He thought he had the potion, when he's all like cocky about it, like, that was funny, too.
Yeah.
Love it.
I don't know.
The slow-mo.
Yeah, the slow-mo.
That was awesome. What did you think of Cormac, Sam?
I thought he was wonderful. The acting was superb in this film, and I did. I mean, he was a caricature.
Yeah.
Like so many of
Dig,
these.
I think Lab is a little over the top, if I have to complain about something.
Yeah.
But that's the same way in the books. I mean, there are certain people who come in and out of these books that are very obviously exaggerated.
I know.
You know?
I think she's exaggerated from the book.
Huh.
A little bit. That's just me.
I loved her. I thought she was great.
She was hilarious.
You know, her and Bonnie should have traded coffee in the morning.
I like how she got her head and her mouth around lines that would sound ridiculous coming out of anybody else's mouth. Like Wan-Wan. We all imagine Wan-Wan as this ridiculous thing coming out of somebody's mouth, but she says it in a very kind of natural, like, oh, Wan-Wan. You know, it's very, yes, she thinks he's just, I don't know. It just, a lot of these stupid, ridiculous things that you probably saw on paper on any actor, and I think, as a matter of fact, Dan Radcliffe said this in the set visit stuff. I think he said, you look at these lines on paper and it's like, how do you even approach something as over the top as this? And she really kind of assimilated it. And
well, what was one of your other critiques, was one of mine actually originally, was how you thought it kind of jumped around and how it went, you know, beautiful, beautiful scene, stop, pick up again, beautiful, beautiful scene. So it's pretty much a transitional issue.
And I don't know what it is, because, like, for example, there was one, Yates is so good at this, when they were sitting around in the Burrow, and they had that shot, and they burned that Daily Prophet. Oh, that was
great,
exquisite.
Great,
it was beautiful.
Nice foreboding.
Some of them are gorgeous.
What's happening?
So why
some
was that the rest of the
absolutely
movie?
Absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's like, I think it turned into, like, an editing issue.
Could be.
For time or what, because, like, towards the end, they just, you know, without all pomp and circumstance of Harry getting the memory, it's in Dumbledore's office and jump, and then here we go, and we're in the Pensieve.
I think also, though, I mean, if they used something to transition something like that, an image, a trick of the light, something foreboding, something obviously a transition in every scene, we'd start being like, oh my god, it's like the freaking Papers again.
See, I like the Papers in the fifth film.
I did too. Yeah. But the thing is, you can watch a story go by in a movie and be engrossed and not know that it's a scene. You're watching a story. And I did not get that feeling when I was watching this movie.
It's like, you get it, and then you didn't. Because some parts, like, my favorites was how they did the whole scene on the Hogwarts Express. That felt like one big fluid thing.
Yeah.
And it was achieved brilliantly by keeping that running camera shot going in and out of the windows. I loved all the Hogwarts Express stuff.
Oh, it was.
And then you see another more brilliance when they are panning the camera all around Hogwarts, and you see Ron Lavender in the stairs, and then you go out that window, and then you see Draco looking off the thing.
Oh, that's my favorite shot in the entire film.
It's gorgeous. I'm like, thank you very much. This was awesome.
See, I guess perhaps my problem, like Melissa's right, maybe I was just too, I've seen so much beforehand, and I was just so overwhelmed in the time that I'd be before it.
We're more engrossed, too, in the details of this film than anybody. Maybe outside the filmmakers than anybody, because he just every day was another clip and an image and a this and a that.
I
and
had to
maybe,
keep it right. I had to
like,
keep it
subconsciously,
straight.
You might have. I mean, obviously, your critiques are totally yours to have and totally accurate for you, you know, but maybe in your head subconsciously some things started gelling. Like, they released so much of this movie that it almost felt like, looking back now, because now that we can.
Yeah.
That there was almost a movie release.
I did
and that was
on the internet.
Else you said was that there were things in the promo materials that weren't in the movie.
Yeah, I was so just okay.
Which
now.
Just goes to show, like, why release all of these video clips before you have a final cut of your movie if this could potentially happen?
Maybe you guys will, you remember, because I've only seen this once, and so maybe my memory is faulty on this. But was this shot, and we saw this in several trailers and TV spots, of Lupin very clearly saying about smell it, see, you know, about the werewolf out there? Was
that whole scene was cut the heck down.
Okay.
We had the whole script to that scene, and this is one of my big complaints, is what the hell. Other Death Eaters, including Fenrir Greyback, who was not mentioned by name once in this movie other than a wanted poster, did not have a single line. He had lines in the script. They were erased from the movie. What is your point of even casting this creature other than being eye candy?
Is it made clear that he's actually a werewolf? Because I really did not
at all. Nope, he's just a hairy-looking dude. There's not any way to know any of this. And it was neat to have him there as a book fan. You're like, oh, cool, it's Greyback. But I feel like they pulled a lot of punches because things were too scary. Anytime where the editing is weird, I feel like it was too scary.
My one big gripe, that if there's something I gotta ask about this entire film is, why were they at Hogwarts? What function were the Death Eaters performing
exactly
by showing up and leaving Hogwarts? Why was Draco working all year to get them in if they were only going to be an audience to something that the Dark Lord had commanded him to do? That's what he was doing. That's why he was repairing this cabinet, so that they could come watch him do what only he was allowed, or Snape was allowed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then they just leave? Like, I get it. It was beautiful, and it was a setting up of a new world order, and it was a momentous, like, march out of the castle, etc. But at least in the book, they're there to try and take over. They have a battle. They try to do it. And I didn't miss the battle. I'm not like one of these people who's like, there had to be a battle, blah, 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 blah. But there has to be a reason that
there
that
should
Draco
have been something.
Was, you know, bring
either,
him in there.
Either don't bring him in there, or bring him in there because there are a few people who actually weren't sleeping during Hogwarts' invasion and actually decided to fight back. And
or
it would
like,
be fine if there's a
all
little
you had to do
scuffle.
Was have Snape and Draco hightail it. That would have just made perfect sense. Snape and Draco.
Yeah.
Forget all the Vanishing Cabinet stuff. Snape, you know, Draco tries to kill Dumbledore. Snape does it. They both need to leave.
Yeah, I mean, it does give a reason for Draco and Snape acting when they did.
But I'm thinking that's what they probably did. Like, it was like Draco had to get needed to be doing something, and they made the Vanishing Cabinet. And to have a Vanishing Cabinet, you know, and have nothing come out of it would have been pointless.
But do you think that nobody stopped to think, like, wait a second, wait a second. What is he actually trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, in terms of plot.
Can we figure out what that is and try to make it actually serve the story and maybe change it? Because if you're not going to do the battle, then the whole vanishing cabinet thing is just kind of toothless. Like, they just show up and leave. That's what, all they do. They show up, dark mark, fire, leave.
Yep. Destroy Great Hall. Throw away a little extra thing.
I like that.
Dur, reparo, fixed, done.
I like the...
But yeah,
the,
it was neat to see, but it's like they're just throwing in reasons for them to be there at this point.
It was weird. It was bizarre. Like, somebody... I knew there was something, like, niggling. Like, why is something bothering me about this? And somebody leaned over to me on tour and just went, so wait, what were the Death Eaters doing there? And I'm like, that's it!
Well, I guess maybe
there?
They can defend that by thinking Dumbledore would have put up a fight at some
point. Oh,
and they
that's
didn't
a good point.
Him
they thought that he would need
the
backup.
But Draco was trying to kill him all year.
Yeah. You would need six Death Eaters to maybe disable Dumbledore to the point where Draco could kill him.
Then why, when they came in, does Draco leave before they get out of the Vanishing Cabinet?
Well, that is the other weird thing, too, is that Draco has no reason to come up there first if they're not all getting held up by a battle.
Exactly. If they're there for backup, you walk up with them.
Yeah.
He has no, you know, so it's just it all, it's storytelling. Like,
everything has a counter argument here. It's really
do this forever,
kind of stupid.
I know. As a matter of fact, we will do it forever.
Yeah, and we'll pick it all apart in princely pieces, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful. It'll be a good time. And everybody will send Sue hate mail after this.
I'm going to send you one right now.
Okay, do.
I'm working on mine. I'm just spell checking, actually.
Thank you. Okay.
There. Now you're getting hate mail.
All right. Good.
Do not.
I actually have a filter in Gmail. Whenever someone types "you suck," it just gets forwarded to trash.
Nice.
I have to empty the trash like every 3 days.
Okay.
Time for some acting troupe.
Acting troupe, yay!
Bye.
Previously on Albus Potter and the Founder's Fountain.
Scorp, you're here. What was Professor Longbottom doing here anyway?
I keep thinking he's going to tell Dad about me nicking that stupid key.
Who's the man in the portrait?
His name's Phineas Nigelus Black.
Come down here and look at this. Between those two floorboards, it's shaped like two letter S's intertwined with each other.
This object was made by none other than Salazar Slytherin himself, and the heads of Slytherin have guarded it on his behalf.
If he was meant to look after Miss Finn when he was Slytherin head of house, how come he took it out of Hogwarts in the first place? You keep it, Scorp. You're as much a Slytherin as anyone else.
Hand over that key, Professor Longbottom gave me. Can't you see it? When I hold them side by side, they're exactly the same size, gold and silver.
They must both be part of the fountain. Well, that's that, then, Scorp. You can't hand it in.
Back. Can you believe it, Al?
Believe what?
We're not new anymore.
I suppose not. Where is everybody? Scorp and Layla were supposed to meet us here.
Maybe they got lost up on the way to Gryffindor Tower. No, wait. Here they are now. Hi, Scorp.
Hi.
Hi, Layla.
Hello, everybody. Oh, I like it up here. It's almost as comfortable as the Hufflepuff common room. Can I sit on the stool?
Go ahead. Oh, hi, James. I thought you were going flying before dinner.
Can't practice catching on my own. Fred and Lewis aren't back yet. Merlin, Al, isn't it enough that I have to share a dinner table with a Slytherin without you inviting your little friends up to the common room as well? No offence, Rose. Your family. You can stay.
Thank you so much. I'm honoured. Ignore him, you two. We're Al's guests and it's perfectly all right for us to be here. James, stop being a git and tell us what Romania was like.
Incredible. I rode on the back of a dragon.
Did you really? Wow. No, you didn't. Albus, your brother is a liar.
He's just kidding, Layla. Don't get upset.
I am not upset.
Calm down. Didn't mean to yank anyone's wand. Any of you squirts fancy a game of wizard chess before dinner? Call it my way of welcoming you into the Gryffindor fold.
Not now, James. I'm kind of busy. Would you mind playing on your own?
Not even you, Rosie. I could do with a decent game.
Sorry, James.
No worries. See you at dinner, Al. And the rest of you too, no doubt.
What time is dinner, anyway? I'm starving.
Hey, look who's coming through the portrait hole.
It's Professor Longbottom.
I wonder what he wants.
He most never comes in here.
Listen up, everyone. All right, I'm sorry I have to tell you all this, but I'm afraid dinner's going to be rather late this evening.
What's happened, Professor?
Well, it's actually a rather unfortunate incident on the Flu Network. As far as I can understand, an elderly wizard's got himself stuck in a chimney just outside Peterborough.
No, the poor man.
In any case, it's caused quite a bit of disruption. Most of our teaching staff, as well as several students who missed the train, are now stuck at home until the blockage is cleared.
Well, that's just great. Al, can I have one of those chocolate frogs I bought you for Christmas?
Sorry, mate. They're in my trunk. I have to go hungry.
I got some ice mice here if anyone wants one.
Cool, yummy. Thanks.
Professor Longbottom's coming over here.
Hello, Albus. Oh, what if we hear visitors?
I invited them, Professor. Is that all right?
Oh, of course it is. Well, welcome to our humble abode, you three.
Thank you, Professor.
Well, see you at dinner, I expect.
Where did you spend Christmas, Leela?
I stayed here. My mother's abroad working at a hippogriff sanctuary. She couldn't get away.
Oh, that's awful. You should have told us. I'd have invited you to come and stay with us when Scorp did.
Thank you, Rose, but it was quite pleasant here. Professor McGonagall pulled a cracker with me, and my mother sent me this book as a present. Isn't it beautiful?
I like the cover. What's it made of?
It's real grapple leather, to protect it out in the field. You can touch it if you want.
Thanks. Cool photographs.
I didn't know you liked books, Scorp.
I've got tons at home. Good ones, that is. Not boring school stuff.
Can I have a look next?
Of course.
Al, it's Auntie Luna.
I didn't know she had a book coming out.
I heard Mum talking about it at Christmas, but I didn't know it was already in the shops.
It isn't. My mother got it for me in advance, from the author.
Your mum is friends with our Auntie Luna.
Luna Lovegood is your aunt? I didn't know. She isn't really.
She's friends with our parents. They were at school together, with Professor Longbottom as well.
Perhaps Professor Longbottom would like to see the book, if they are friends.
I'll pull him back over. Professor!
Wow. Your Auntie Luna's got a picture of a manticore. That's pretty hardcore.
A manticore? Last, may I see?
What'd you say, at last?
Don't you remember, Al? She was talking about wanting one of those last time we saw her.
Well, she's been talking about it for much longer than that, actually. Years, in fact. Navigations in Naturalism by Luna Lovegood and Rolf Scamander. A wonderful present.
Thank you, Professor.
Oh, my goodness.
What's up, Professor?
She used this photograph. God, that takes me back years.
Which photograph? Let me see.
This one of a Gringalow, you mean?
See the sly expression on its face? That's because I was trying to grab a sample of gillyweed you can just about see in the background. It nearly got me, luckily the camera flash frightened it off.
Wow.
Auntie Luna saved your life.
Indeed she did, and not for the first time. Here's your book back. I'll see you all later.
Cooler than he looks, isn't he?
I don't start, Scorpius.
What do you mean?
He's cooler than most wizards his age ever were.
What are you getting at, most wizards his age? Are you trying to say something about my dad?
No, she isn't. Are you, Rosie?
Don't get bossy with me, Albus Severus Potter. I'll say what I like.
Did you know Professor Longbottom lives over a pub, Leela? Now that's pretty cool, isn't it, Scorp?
What is a pub?
Leela doesn't care about that, Al. But you know, after the Battle of Hogwarts, when all the plants in the greenhouses were used up fighting the Death Eaters.
Yes?
Well, Professor Longbottom went practically everywhere in the world collecting them again. And that's how he knows so much about where they all came from, even the rarest ones.
He is a very good instructor. I think he's our best teacher.
No way! That's Professor Crumb.
Nonsense, Scorp. You're only saying that because he's your head of house. Mind you, I think Professor Flitwick is better than Professor Longbottom.
And you're only saying that because you don't get top marks in Herbology.
Only because I'm always having to stop and help you.
We are wasting time.
Leela's right. We've got ages before dinner now. We should talk about what to do next with the fountain.
So let us question Creature. It's a good time. If dinner is late, he shouldn't be busy.
Great idea. Come on, let's go.
Ladies first.
Who are you calling ladies?
Watch it, Scott. She'll stun you again if you're not careful.
I was only being polite.
I wouldn't bother in the future. After you.
Which way from here, Layla?
Turn right when you get to the entrance hall. There's a staircase.
The kitchens must be right under the great hall.
They are.
How do we get in?
Just tickle the pair. Here, let me.
Wow, it's huge.
Just look at all this food. It must be what we're having for dinner.
But where are all the house elves?
Having a rest, I expect.
We're here. I'll go and get Creature.
Knows her way around, doesn't she? All this food's making me hungry. Do you think anyone would notice if I nicked a roast potato?
Drop it, Score.
Okay. Where did that come from?
It was a simple caterwauling charm, of course.
Doesn't your mother use them at home to stop you stealing food?
Of course she doesn't. What's all the noise? You woke everyone up.
It was Scorp.
Is the small student hungry? Allow Creature.
A pumpkin pasty. Cool.
This is Creature. Creature, I brought some people for you to meet. The greedy one is Scorpius.
Hey!
Good afternoon, sir.
And I'm Rose. Please don't bow.
This is Albus Potter. He says he knows you.
Creature is honored to meet the second son of the great Harry Potter.
Hello, Creature. Nice to meet you, too.
Albus wants to ask you something.
Creature will do anything in his power to assist the young master.
Yeah, don't call me that.
Don't give him orders, Albus. He'll have to obey you.
Oh, right. Creature, you can just call me Al, if that's all right with you.
That's better.
Can we get a move on? Right. Well, we're looking for something to do with Helga Hufflepuff. And we thought you might know, because Layla reckons house elves have, like, this special connection with her.
It is so. Helga Hufflepuff made Hogwarts a refuge for us. House elves honor her memory above all other witches and wizards. What is this something you are looking for? Creature would like to help, but the young Al is not giving Creature much to go on.
Right. Sorry. It could be a magical object, or a spell. Something that would make a fountain work.
Let me try. Look, Creature, we're looking for something that's been around since the castle was built. Something that's linked to Helga Hufflepuff. Is that any help?
Creature knows of no magical objects or anything to do with fountains. But he can show you Hufflepuff's scrolls.
Hufflepuff's scrolls?
All the castle's records are kept down here.
In the kitchens? They'd be ridiculous.
Please, follow Creature. This way.
Oh, it's all dark.
Now this is what I call spooky. Does Hufflepuff's ghost live in here, do you think?
Don't be silly, Scorpius. The founders don't haunt the castle. I still don't believe there can be any important papers in this filthy old cupboard. Lumos.
Wow. He wasn't kidding when he mentioned scrolls. Are you, Creature? But it makes sense, if you think about it.
What do you mean?
Well, Rosie, didn't you say Helga Hufflepuff was, like, the housekeeper or something?
Not the housekeeper. I said she brought everyone together to build Hogwarts, and that she was particularly good at food spells.
So you are, then. She was the boss. And this is where she had her headquarters.
But Al, these papers must be so valuable.
Oh, for Merlin's sake, Rose, when the quest is over, you can see about getting the move to the library. Now can we please get on with it?
I suppose we'd better start looking.
But where do we start?
This is going to take hours, and I'm still hungry.
Hours? No, you wish to see something linked to Helga Hufflepuff from when the castle was first built. Allow Creature.
Whoa! Did you see that? Not even an Accio.
What is it, Creature?
This is Hufflepuff's book.
It must be 1,000 years old.
Give it to Rosie, Creature. She reads faster than me.
No, he should give it to Layla.
Scorp's right now.
Go on, Layla. Tell us what's in the book.
Give me a moment. Helga Hufflepuff's Household Diary, July 1st. Today, the roof. Godric and Salazar in the Great Hall from dawn to dusk. Spells as finely wrought as I've ever seen. Tomorrow, the window charms. The castle will be weather-tight. Our joy is great.
Merlin's pants! This is Hufflepuff's dive from when the castle's being built. Creature, you're a legend.
Creature thanks you, Al, son of Harry Potter.
Oh, please don't bow.
Creature must go and prepare the serving spells now. Is Creature dismissed?
Of course. You don't have to ask. Can we stay here and read more of this?
Creature advises Albus Potter and his friends not to be late to the feast. Young humans require regular sustenance.
I'll say we do.
Don't worry, Creature. We won't be late. Thank you so much.
Keep going, Layla. Have you found anything about the fountain yet?
Not yet. Wait, this might be something.
Read it. Go on.
August 20th. Relations between Godric and Slytherin.
Oh.
What?
She stopped calling Slytherin by his first name. I wonder why. Sorry, I won't interrupt again.
Relations between Godric and Slytherin continue to deteriorate. Rowena assures me the final joining ceremony will affect a reconciliation. Her stair plan is complete. We await only the charm for the entrance hole fountain. I pray the remaining hours elapse without incident, that 10 days from now our school will be permanently safeguarded.
This is it! At last!
We're on the right track.
But our fountain isn't anywhere near the entrance hall. What's the next entry?
The next one doesn't say anything about the fountain.
What's the matter, Leela?
Go on, keep reading.
August 24th. Our doors open in 1 week. Can scarce believe our dearest hope, a wizarding school, is finally come to pass. So many sacrifices and compromises necessary along the way. Can the truce hold? I fear... The next bit's scored out. I can't read a word of it.
Oh dear.
Is that the end?
Don't tell me Slytherin's going to slither off without her telling us any more about the fountain.
Don't you think like that about Slytherin?
He did kind of leave everyone in the lurch.
The coward.
Quiet, please. There's more here. August 27th. Slept in the Great Hall, all of us together for the first time in weeks. Rowena finally satisfied her... Concordance charm for the fountain will hold.
Hold on a sec. What does concordance mean?
Shush, Scorp, this is it. Let me concentrate.
But what's it mean?
Agreement, goodwill, that sort of thing.
It's all I wanted to know.
Go on, Layla.
If the joining goes as planned, she assures us that the water will flow without ceasing. For the remainder, Godric has the trigger prepared. It is a thing of beauty. Not even Rowena pretends to understand the spell work. Slytherin's still reluctant to attend the ceremony if his demands are not met. Without his binding spell, all will be lost.
The trigger for binding. She means the key in that Silverfin Scorp found. This is everything.
No, it isn't. What about her magic? Hufflepuffs.
Keep reading.
August 31st. It is over. I have failed. Slytherin will negotiate no longer. Godric refuses to enter the room if he is there. Slytherin will not perform the final binding, and not 2 hours ago threatened to leave entirely. He may already be gone. Rowena has retreated to her tower. I hear her weeping. She will see no one but the child, her only comfort. Would that I...
Would that she were.
The next line is scored out again. Shall I continue? I don't think we'll find out any more information about the fountain.
Go on. Might as well know the worst.
Very well. Our fountain, the crowning pinnacle and symbol of all we have struggled to build, will never now stand to welcome new members to our community, safeguard our students, and quench the flames of discord before they take hold. The sword of disunity and destruction will hang over our school forever. We are at least prepared, thanks to Godric's foresight, for this eventuality. The sorting hat knows its task. Our students will always be safe. But with our four houses in such precarious balance, can they ever be secure? I am sick at heart.
Wow.
But we didn't get to hear about the, what does she call it? The joining ceremony. It's so frustrating.
Well, at least we know now we've only got Ravenclaw's thing to find. This syncordance charm or whatever it's called. Hufflepuff didn't do anything.
Of course she did something.
Like what? She never says anything about what she's done, only the others. She just writes in her diary and whinges about everything.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Scorp. Isn't it obvious?
Isn't what obvious?
Someone else explain it to him. I can't be bothered.
What Rose means is it seems pretty clear that Hufflepuff was the one who came up with the idea of the Founder's Fountain in the first place.
Exactly. And it sounds like she was the only one who even tried to stop Slytherin from mucking up everything. She might as well not have bothered. He sounds like a selfish pig.
So what do we do now?
Shall we get together tomorrow after lessons and discuss this?
Tomorrow, Al? Really? It's the first week of term. We're bound to get loads of homework.
And Quidditch practices start tomorrow.
So what? It's not like you're in the team.
Professor Crumb coaches. I'm wanting to notice I'm there watching.
But for Merlin's sake, what about you, Lula? I suppose you'll be too busy looking for wild animals in the Forbidden Forest or something.
I will be helping Hagrid with the Thestral Herd at dusk, if that's what you mean.
I knew it.
But that does not take too long. I agree. We should meet every day until we have worked out the next stage of our quest.
Every day? No way!
I definitely can't do every day either. I'm sorry, Al. Why can't we keep working on it on our own? There's acres of the library left to search. I don't mind doing some of that every day. I'm in there anyway.
No good.
Lila's right. We need to be working on this together. At least some of the time.
I have an idea. Why don't we start sitting at the same table for all of our meals?
That's a fantastic idea. That'll give us loads of time to talk.
I'm not sure. Won't we just get even more with looks and questions? Cyril and his gang were giving me a hard time about it when I got back this afternoon.
Who cares about that? I don't mind. I'll do it.
There'll be some talk, but it'll soon die down. Come on, Scorp. Are you in?
I suppose so. Anything's better than missing Quidditch practice every night.
We should get out of here. The house elves are getting busy. It must be nearly dinner time.
Come on. We can keep talking about our next move while we're eating.
I already know what mine's going to be.
What's that, Rosie?
Did you hear the bit in the diary about the child? She was talking about Rowena Ravenclaw's daughter.
So what? She's been dead nearly as long as her mum.
Ah, but has she?
What are you on about, Rosie? We're talking hundreds of years ago.
Okay, so she is dead and buried, but she's also still very much around. She's the Grey Lady, the Ravenclaw ghost. I can talk to her.
Have you ever actually seen her?
Of course I have. She was in the Great Hall on our first evening.
And since?
Well, no. I hear she's pretty elusive, but once she knows I'm looking for her, I'll find her soon enough.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Rose. Hey, Al, I bet you noticed that shepherd's pie.
It looks amazing.
Come on, I'll race you.
This week's episode of Albus Potter and the Founder's Fountain featured the voice talents of Matt Armstrong, Susie B., Caroline Fonseca, Eric Lessinger, Izzy Martin, Stacey Murano, Rachel Proudfoot, and Nicole Slavin. It was produced by Angela Hohenstein, Becky Maturo, Joe Mativier, Rachel Proudfoot, Christy Seedy, and Kevin Toma.
It's the drum!
It is the drum. You guys, our 4-year anniversary is coming, and what are we doing to celebrate?
I don't know.
Nothing.
Nothing? That's not much of a party.
No, we are having an awesome, you've requested it, you've wanted it, you've been asking for it, a marathon of Bit by Bit.
Oh my god.
Holy cow. We are going to sit and clam ourselves into a room and get on Ustream with all of you and pound out the rest of the Bit by Bits, if possible. It will be possible, whether it takes us all night or not.
Wow.
And we'll get through all Bit by Bits. What do you guys think of that? Sound fun?
Sounds riveting.
Actually, it sounds like a good motivation to get us through it, so I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, we can do it.
We need to just pound through them, man. We need to just take that book and charge.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's really no sense in this because it's not like we're trying to get like ready for the next book or anything, but we might be hitting ourselves after we realize there's nothing else to talk about. But
what you hear here will last, like, you know, you're going to hear the information that's going to go into a billion shows, like,
yeah,
40 shows or something.
They're going to have to listen to it all over again.
Oh.
Yeah, well, not everybody will be on the Ustream. Hell, there's
everybody,
like 80,000 of you
every
week, and there's like 100 of you
every
on
week,
Ustream.
And we broadcast live at ustream.podcast.
Yeah.
So you should.
And only like 1/1,000th of you show up, so.
We did the only live stream from the New York premiere on that channel. It's a channel worth bookkeeping. Bookkeeping. Bookmarking. Hello.
Can we talk about that live surprise broadcast from the...
My arm still hurts.
That was phenomenal. Do you understand? Do you all at home understand that Melissa was not only recording, which, and if you're ever on a red carpet, these things are very tight and very high press, and she's holding this computer up so we can get this picture. It was amazing. That was unbelievable.
On my arm. Alex Robin was running the video camera behind me, and basically, like, a red carpet is a jungle, and basically when we got into position, the people next to us kind of hated us for having a tripod, you know?
Yeah.
And then we realized that the people next to us had never read a Harry Potter book in their lives, so we became the go-to question people, so then all of a sudden they loved us. So when I explained that I was going to try and do this crazy thing, that Alex and I kind of looked at each other and were like, should we attempt this? We're like, well, give it a shot, see what happens. 5 minutes before the red carpet started, then we were cool. But literally, I had a microphone in one hand to try and catch people's words. I'm trying to, like, to make sure I've got good questions going in my head the whole time. I've got the computer on my arm over the barrier. I'm trying not to drop the computer or get jostled on a red carpet, which is inevitable. For, what was it, an hour and a half?
Yes.
Just, oh my god. I can't even think about it without getting a twinge at my forearm. But it was fun.
It was wonderful, though, because as a fan, you know, someone like me and everybody that was just thrilled out of our mind, because not only, I mean, you were asking great questions, but the stars said hello to Leaky. It was unbelievably cool. They were thrilled by it. I thought that was just, that was the bomb, man.
It made me really happy when people were excited to say hello to people. And you know who was? Tom Felton, first of all. He walked up and was like, oh, Leaky Cauldron, I'm a big fan, which... We always, whether he's being nice or honest, we appreciate.
We go,
And Emma Watson was really excited to say hello to people. It's so crazy on
Emma
the red carpet
Watson.
That people don't really, you don't know if they've heard you or they know, but it was just really nice to be able to, like, direct some of that towards actual fans who were watching in the chat at that time, you know?
It was thrilled. I don't know if you could have that you couldn't see that chat, because the chat was most mind-boggling thing I've ever seen in my life. I got dizzy just trying to keep up with it.
Were there 2,500 people in there?
Yes, that was amazing. I'm surprised we didn't crash it, but it was this great picture, and that everyone was just thrilled, because it felt like we were all part of that moment, and, you know, as a fan, I was just, like, so grateful for that. I was just thrilling, and, It was wonderful. We all felt like we were all part of it, and it was so cool. It was amazing. Between that and Twitter, Melly.
You
were Twittering during the broadcast.
Because once we knew we were doing the Ustream, I could not. There was no way I could have a microphone, a computer, and also keep our Twitter feed updated. So Sue is, like, watching the Ustream and taking things people are saying and putting it on Twitter. It's just, like, this massive Leaky team effort thing. Alex has got the camera, and he's got it covered, and it was just, it was wild. It was the wildest red carpet we've ever done, and red carpets.
But I'm so grateful your arm put up with it, but it was so cool, because it was just like we were all part of it, and it was just really a fan experience. I mean, we had watched the week before during that monsoon that the poor people were in London, and it was just, you know, oh. And some of that video was fabulous after we saw it, but it was just like, it was so immediate, and it was just, I love technology. I love the interwebs.
Frank and John, what exactly were you doing?
Oh, jeez. Do you remember, Frankie?
Were you driving somewhere massively?
Well, the movie came out, it was the 8th.
After the 9th. Yeah, we were probably...
We
were driving, like, overnight trips through, like, Wyoming and Montana and everything else, and God help us. So one night, we just kept driving. We never bothered to go to a hotel, so we pulled over at a rest stop and...
And rested.
Put the seats back and tried to fall asleep until the sun came up, and then we got donuts.
John.
What?
Of course. Donuts.
That was fun. We had a lot of random...
None of this was as bad as all of you bailing on me for Vancouver.
Oh, bailing.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, I want to hear... Tell the story about that. I heard what happened
there. Vancouver was
awesome
show. One of our biggest crowds. One of our, most enthusiastic people to see us. And I was the only one on the podcast.
I would have loved to have gone to Canada.
Why is that, John?
Because Melissa was gone, Frankie didn't have his passport, even Bree didn't have her passport, and Sue wasn't there, so it was me and my lonesome, with the Lupins and the Wompies. And we did a good trivia show, and It was a lot of fun, but you clowns weren't there.
I would have been there if I could, because I would love to go to Canada.
Canada's awesome.
But I did get to see the first Starbucks.
Oh,
yeah, cool. You guys got a bunch of Seattle.
I love Seattle.
Well, you guys had a great tour, though. I mean, that must have, you, every time, it, you know, or the ones we got the Ustream, like the ones with the Potters that started off was amazing, and then just when we got to see the Ustreams along the way, it looks like you had huge crowds. It must have been.
Oh, yeah, we did some fun Ustreams. I wish we would have done more of them, but.
I think near the end of tour, we just were getting kind of tired. There was Comic-Con, there was Azcatraz,
and
we just, there was no time to really settle down and do a Ustream, and
the
internet was untenable and unreliable, and so it was hard at near the end. And I think we were all, as amazing a time it was and everything, I think we were all really happy to be home. It was done.
Oh, totally.
I don't know how. Like, Matt, for instance, is, like, always out on tour. There's.
Oh, I know. He lives for the road. Oh. Take him back to Sherbourne Drive.
I could not do 6 weeks again.
So don't.
I would not be able to do that again.
So soon?
I wanted to know how many Chipotle cards you got this time. Cause
three. One of those trays.
That's it?
Yeah. Well, three very generous cards, and a lot of people giving me high fives for being part of the John Lewis Chipotle Alliance.
I know, that's what I was getting
at. Awesome.
Like, your Chipotle Alliance.
Yeah.
Chipotle Alliance.
Ree doesn't like the Chipotle Alliance.
She doesn't.
She thinks this is a bad thing, and I'm like, you just don't understand. It's like a secret club. It's like I can send out decoder rings to these people, and they would know what to do with them.
So you're starting
to decode stuff.
Yes, decode the Noe Thursday shows.
Yes, because sometimes you do need some decoding. Like, for instance, when there are stories about milk on hand.
When they are about cows, and they are about
milk
girls and espresso girls.
Speaking of all this stuff,
why
are we all getting back to our vlogs? Like, I know that I've just been so busy since I got back that it's.
Oh, I mean the Pottercast YouTube blog?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm still uploading. We're still uploading tour vlogs. I've got a ton of video on my camera. I'm just going to throw into blogs and put them up. But if you have not subscribed to the YouTube Pottercast stuff, you should. There's some awesome stuff on there.
Oh. What if what if you did, like, a crazy new, like, idea, like, have Sue Week, and then John Week, and Frankie Week, and have, like, a huge cool video every week?
Sorry. I vote no.
It's way too much work for a week.
What are you talking about? Like, one video
videos,
a week. Not
so
every damn day. Like,
videos.
Every Friday. Wrap up.
One video a week? What a crappy channel.
Be like, this week in Potter. Be like, this week in Potter with Sue, and this week in Potter with Frankie.
What a crappy channel to be one video a week.
That's not true.
Well, you guys do them as often as your heart
quantity
desires.
Quantity over quality, and it's not helped us so far.
Okay, sure, John. When we do a video, if you do one video a month, because that's what it would work out to, I will bet you that there is no difference in quality.
Oh, nonsense.
Oh, okay.
It's
see?
True, John.
Crack notes.
That's nonsense.
Listen, you guys do them as much
George
as you got a day of the week.
Using all your fun visual effects.
I would do cool stuff like that. Give me an opportunity to actually say, wow, all I have to do is this cool video a month.
I'll
make magic stuff coming out of my
John,
eyeballs.
I've known you for like 5 years. Okay.
Hey, you know, that Vlogbrothers animation came out of, you know, a night of inspiration. I could do one of those a month. What the hell?
Okay, sure.
5 years you've known John, so we've been doing Pottercast 4 years, though.
Yeah. How long have I known you, John? When did we meet? Was it 2004 or 3?
The first year of knowing me, you didn't have, you know, much interest in me because
you
I was
always
just,
say this, but it's untrue.
It's so true.
I didn't
completely
have
true.
The ability to meet up with you. When will you get over this?
Right, yeah.
You could.
John,
you're probably
I am,
out, like,
emailed
laughing
me
with other
and
friends
said he was
going to
be in New York like 3 days before he was in New York, and I amazingly was busy, and he will never let me forget it.
You're probably out with your real friends laughing about the idea that I wanted to see you.
Don't you understand by now that I have no real friends?
You had all these cool friends back then.
You guys are my real friends.
We scared them all away when we came around. Melissa was like hitting all the clubs in New York like every weekend.
Me.
Eric Wonder raves. She had pink in her
I'm
hair actually
friend.
When I met her.
That's what I'm saying, Sue. I mean, when I say I have no quote-unquote real friends, it's you guys are my real friends, period. John's like, oh, you're a real friend.
Well, this is a long time ago.
Oh.
I want to say it was 2003, actually.
It was when I graduated college, or high school, in 2003, and then I went to my first year at Kent State, and that was where I was sitting bored in my dorm one night. I decided to email you about Leaky. That was 2003, probably October.
So we met in 04, so yeah, 5 years.
Yay!
Oh!
All right, on that note, can we...
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, guys, wait, so some great stuff is coming up on...
Oh, great stuff.
On Pottercast. And I think we have a lot of reorganization of the show, some new
yes.
music, a fun new segment, I believe, is coming.
Oh, a very cool new segment that hopefully we'll have ready to
people.
Go after our fourth year of Pottercast.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fresh new sound, fresh new Pottercast.
And a lot more food for thought in this show. So
yeah.
We're excited. We hope you are, too.
Can I say one more random thing before we go?
No!
Yes. No.
Please go to leakycon.com. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yes. My God, we have a new website. And, guys, seriously, we're starting to gather volunteers for LeakyCon. We have our official dates now for LeakyCon. We are starting to put together plans. It's in 2 years at the park. We might do an event in the fall of 2010 to celebrate the movie release. Call it like LeakyCon 1 3/4, but
nice.
That's going to be much on a much smaller scale and in a much different location. But the big
Food
party
camping?
Is LeakyCon 2011.
You know, there's a pretty artwork, a pretty witch. Who did that pretty witch?
That would be Frack.
Mm. Yay!
Hey.
Like
Frack draws everything.
He's a doodler. What can he say? He doodles.
I doodle.
I'm excited.
That witch we drew on tour last year.
Oh my gosh, she did.
Marvel.
But if you are interested in a awesome volunteering for the most awesome conference in 2011, you need to get involved because we are making big plans and registration is going to be open this year.
Ooh,
yeah, we're opening it way ahead of time. We're going to start sharing information about what's going to be going on there way faster than we did for LeakyCon 09. We want you guys to know exactly what you'll be in for. So bookmark LeakyCon 2011, LeakyCon.com. Follow us on Twitter at LeakyCon 2011. And
yes.
You will keep yourself updated.
Squee!
Sounds perfect.
Can't wait.
Well, on that note, kids, is it time to keep twiddling your dials?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The next password will be... Bit by bit!
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night!
Good
night! We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours.
Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
Go ahead and count.
One.
Oh.
Is that a two?
Oh. Sounds like count.
Sorry.
Three.
Let's do it again.
One.
Two.
Three.
Four.
One.
Two.
Three.
Four.